The Petaluma Radio Players.
Like talking on air.
And now, the Petaluma Radio Players, located just north of the Golden Gate Bridge in Northern California's Sonoma County, bring you another provocative radio drama from their home on www.kpca.fm. Our drama during this week's presentation, The Sentinel, by New Jersey playwright Hal Cawley. Longtime building resident Gilly shares hallway support and gossip with new-to-town tenant Mara in a suburban metropolitan drama which asks audiences to consider the uncomfortable superimposition of old-time neighbourhood values onto de rigueur measures to ensure self-preservation in a world of suicide and stalkers. And now, The Sentinel.
Next door, hon. Wanted to let you know. Police are gone, and I cleaned up the blood, most of it.
Blood?
On our floors, anyways. Great big drops of it, every which way. Leading down the hall there. See all the wet spots where I wiped? Golly, there's one splat on each stair, all the way to the lobby. And look over there. Right there, hon. On that door, even. Golly. Hi, I'm Gilly, by the way. Short for Gillian?
Mara.
Mara. Pretty. You must hear me through our wall there. My new collection, Time Life Love Songs of the 70s. I still love Anne Murray. What is that, Mara? Scottish?
Hebrew. Blood. Was someone seriously hurt?
I should say. With all that broken glass, didn't you hear?
I thought I was dreaming. I'd just taken my... Wait. Someone put their hand through the hall window?
Punched it right on out. Even broke the wood part of the pane. When he pulled it back, must have cut his wrist on the glass in splinters. Wide open. So it gushed out like crazy, the blood. See? Probably sliced his artery. The one right here. You know, the one stupid people use for suicide.
Okay. Sorry.
Hun, I'm sorry. Poor you. Barely moved in, and now this? Don't worry. This place has run terrible, you'll find out. But we don't usually get kooks. There's an even bigger smudge on the wall down there.
Jesus.
I guess when he wouldn't let him in, whoever the dingling was, the guy run to the window and did all that damage in a fit of rage.
What did the police say?
You should have come out, hide it straight from the horse's mouths. With everybody but us gals out tonight, I had to answer him all by myself. I knocked pretty hard, too. You didn't hear?
I was just falling asleep.
Family problems, hon?
What? No.
Oh, I don't even have one of those. People say to me, how do you live without them? I says, I like my phone plugged in. Nice color. Euphoria there? A little bright for me. I got him to repaint mine. Bone white. Ugly name, bone. After all the water damage from the roof, they never fix a thing here. Get used to it. Washers in the basement go back to 2007 and put rust stains on my Easter tea towels. You hung your pictures already.
Couple, I'm sorry. What about the police?
On the way to the emergency now. Look for some bleeding nut. One cop, real sweetheart, I see at St. Avila's. Though I think he's on the source, which is a real shame. He says the cold will make the blood stop up quicker. Congeal. Only 18 out, going down to 2 above. Whew. When they get him, they'll lock him up tight. If he's not a goner. Wonder what he'll have to say for himself about all that. You lived here how long, hon? Only what, couple of weeks?
Feels longer.
Would've introduced myself earlier. You always seem preoccupied. We pass each other on the stairs when I come back from mass. I hit the 7 a.m. every day. Priests are young then. You don't work?
I'm on an extended...
Terrible time of year for a vacation. But you're not the only gal on the premises in the daytime. Me, haven't held a desk job since 97, when Ma took a nasty fall in the tub. Not that I couldn't get one. But I was all she had. Had to move in on the spot.
She's...
passed back in September 2001, right before, you know... Had her wake just the day before. Friend down the hall, who's passed on since herself, had everybody back for a spaghetti supper. Made homemade tiramisu. I love that stuff. All the trimmings. Funeral got postponed. People say, what bad timing. Like, there's a good time to die.
I'm really sorry, but if you'll excuse me, I just...
Just a minute. You're nice. We need more nice tenants like you. But be on your guard about that one. What do I think happened tonight? Another one showed up, mad about some spat they had.
Another one?
This one owns a couple of flower shops.
I love fresh flowers.
I go for the fake myself. They don't die on you. But watch yourself around that one. Has a lot of guests who come and go at all hours.
I take it you're a light sleeper.
Had to be with Ma. Fall was from a stroke. Smoked camels like a fiend. But everybody's got some kind of weakness need to be forgave for, right? So anyways, I says to our boys in blue, whoever you're looking for with a bloody wrist, he won't be a family man. Set him straight about who lives here now, what goes on. Stuff that never happened in the old days.
But is he noisy? I tend to rest a lot, but I haven't heard a peep.
Peep or no peep. I can sure tell when he's home.
And he can tell when you're home. The Anne Murray collection.
Except for the day they come in the mail. And I try them out on my hi-fi. Mostly I use the Discman player with the earphones I gave Matt in the hospital. You'll find out I'm a considerate neighbor. But him has these fancy Sunday brunches. Everybody brings stinky, I don't know, Arab food. You can smell leftovers in the garbage in the basement. It stays till nighttime.
Must have been hopping around here over the holidays.
No, ma'am. He took off, actually. Christmas. Flew on our Lord's birthday to Miami.
Explains the perfect tan.
Heard him on his cell. Heard him tell one of his whatevers on long distance, I think, how he was flying into the South Beach. That's where they gather down there.
But you just said he's basically low profile.
His shindigs may not be loud, but he don't keep regular hours. His door opens and closes at 3-4 o'clock in the morning.
Not illegal. People leaving late. Maybe you're the only one here.
And maybe it's not a bad thing. Somebody being a night owl around here. I never got out of the habit once Ma passed.
I've come home, seen you in your front window, perched there.
You came in a taxi cab a couple of times, didn't you? New York City cabs, weren't they? Must have cost an arm and a leg. Need to get that, hon?
No, I don't know who the hell it is with my new number.
I just think after tonight, after one of those fellas came calling and didn't get whatever he come for, well, you see what it can lead to.
You think this brunch-throwing florist has a violent boyfriend?
I don't know about that, hon. I just think you better be on your guard.
We met, he and I. He helped me move my things in, carried an ottoman up when the elevator went out, and boxes and boxes of books. I teach, so I have too many. When I moved, suddenly I didn't take the time to... Well, he liked my paint color.
I bet they're good at that stuff. Wants to get you on his side, so you won't complain about him. They always look nice, till something like tonight happens. Hey, one of them killed that Italian dressmaker.
Versace? But that was a...
I know. I got cable. I keep up. You think a flower arranger can't get a stalker, too?
Anybody can. That blood marking that door, it looks almost biblical. Somebody got hurt here. Hurt bad.
Don't touch blood with your bare hands. Especially theirs. I use gloves. The nice cop who drinks beer in his squad car says the creep who done this must be mortally wounded.
Did you know that if you slit your wrist horizontally from left to right, it can end up just a superficial laceration? You bleed slowly and might not actually die, not quickly. That's the coward's, the exhibitionist's weapon, the cut of choice, when you just want to make the grand theatrical gesture. If you actually want to, like, get the deed done, if you have the guts to finish what you start, you have to open your arm vertically to get down deep between and below all the tendons and ligaments to really do major damage to your artery.
You a science teacher? Biology?
No, the fingers freeze up, clench. As someone said to me, your hands turn into claws.
This one's here turned into hammers. He banged the door so hard, told the cops he must have broke something before he hit the window.
Troubled people have triggers that set them off. Hello, what the hell is... This is she. Yeah, but I... No. This number is brand new, unlisted.
I can't carry no books, but I was just being neighborly too.
I'm no one's damn next of kin here. I just moved out here alone.
You okay, hon? More problems?
That Flora's apartment has no number, just like mine doesn't.
Oh, he's too good for the stick-on kind. He had to order fancy tiles, FedEx from California, which I signed for and put by his door. But he won't put them up till management repaints.
And my name isn't on my buzzer, by my number in the lobby.
I know. I had to let your cable man in. Who was that just now?
Mount Morris Memorial. Jesus Christ, I just want to keep my anonymity. Has someone been here asking about me?
Hun, you got family or a friend in a hospital?
That was a cop. Did you tell someone I moved in on your floor? Someone persistent, aggressive, someone with piercing cerulean eyes.
Cerulean?
Blue eyes. Someone pushy with sky blue eyes.
Blue-eyed? I don't know. Maybe? Pushy? I might have. I help out. People get packages, deliveries. I take them in. Protect them. If somebody asks a question, I answer. Why shouldn't I? Everybody else goes to work. I'm always here.
Did it ever occur to you not to answer that I'm none of your damn business any more than this man here is?
Don't speak to me that way. 17 years I live here. My own mother spent her last days in this building. And this used to be a showplace for nice people. We used to leave our doors unlocked and come and go and share Valentine cookies. Walk each other to church when daylight savings was over. Look out for each other the way real neighbors used to. You all right, hun? Sky blue? Listen, I didn't... He was a handsome man. You could see he just got a haircut. The way I can always tell in a young priest. How was I supposed to know you didn't want nobody to find you? How could I? Listen, I help my neighbors out, and I'm proud that I do. Proud. Look at all that blood there. Golly. Something like this has never happened here. Never. I'll be up a while. If you need anything... Anything at all. Even if you don't see a light on under my door, I'm wide awake. I'm here. Dear God, all that blood.
Hello, Hal.
Good morning, Hal.
Good to talk to you. I'm here with my esteemed colleague, Kendra Murray.
Good morning, or afternoon, your time.
Hello.
Hi.
First off, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you in regard to the Sentinel. That said, we would like to launch right in then.
Yeah.
Right.
So this has been a very exciting play for us to work with, and one of the youngest members of our troupe chose this to direct. Our director is Emily Lord, and she is 16 years old. And she was very excited to work with this play. And so I hope that you will enjoy, when you get to hear our finished production, I will hope you will enjoy what she's done with our actors. And as you mentioned to us, you wanted to, in The Sentinel, speak to some previous radio drama that you found quite inspirational, written by the amazing Lucille Fletcher. How did that come about?
It's amazing to me that I, at this late point in my career, I don't know, I have had the opportunity to actually, you know, tread into the water that Lucille was, made a career in. I was 25 years old. I directed Night Watch, Lucille's Broadway play, her one Broadway play at a community theater, and she came. We became friends for decades, and I heard a lot about radio. And of course, this was the late 70s, 80s, and then into the 90s, and there really wasn't much opportunity for radio work.
Right.
But I had this great mentor she had a lot to say about my plays, but she had a lot to say to me about the technique of radio and the suspense lines and the economy and the use of an unusual setting that was claustrophobic in some way. All of those elements, I hope, are in The Sentinel. And so after decades of, since Lucille passed away almost 20 years ago, I have had a great chance with this piece to come back to some of those tropes and reinvent them in perhaps more contemporary terms. But
right.
I felt Lucille on my shoulder, even though this piece doesn't actually reference something like Sorry Wrong Number. It has some of the elements in terms of the style. Two people who have houses next to each other, you're either one yard or the other, or on a driveway, or unless you're at the end of the street. But there's something about the hallway that has its own sort of, because it's been rendered vulnerable by this act of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so to discuss it in that space, a crime scene that kind of belongs to no one but to everyone, struck me as a really interesting spot.
And
it is inherently claustrophobic because it's still contained.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, you did a very interesting twist on the traditional Lucille Fletcher approach to Sorry Wrong Number. In Sorry Wrong Number, we of course have an invalid who is trapped within her environment, not by no choice of her own. And yet in The Sentinel, we have a character who by her choice is trapped and is trying to cut herself off from the world. And yet the driving plot line is this idea that somebody is coming after somebody. Why did you make that choice?
You know, I love the idea that this is kind of a quest for a safe space. And instead of being, you know, a lot of horror films use the rural outlet or the city person who goes to live in the farm in the middle of nowhere, I planted this person in a kind of, you know, suburbia is and shorthand, dramatic shorthand, suggests low crime, safety, and the insulation of a community that keeps trouble at bay. So she's in a 1927 building, and to hide in plain sight, as it were, and it doesn't serve her. So I found that juxtaposition very interesting, that it's not safe, and it's also not trouble headquarters traditionally, like, say, a farmhouse.
And your two women in this story, as Ralph has said, one of them has chosen to stay inside that building. She doesn't ever leave it. And the other woman, the new woman who comes to be there thinking she's escaping to safety, is also isolated because she's choosing to be isolated.
That's a very good point. And I think the title character, I'm very interested I've lived in many apartment buildings. I lived in New York for years, 24 years, and I'm living in a suburban building is very different. But one of the things they have in common is there is invariably this person who has a kind of eye on the building. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the super or building manager, but it's often just a tenant who has self-delegated these responsibilities. And in this case, I met a woman like this, not unlike this, shall we say, who fancied herself a moral arbiter of the community. And so you get a kind of microcosm. And so she's very isolated there, but she has made it her roost and made it a place in which she can make big judgments. So the rubbing that up against someone who is retreating to find that as a safe place, and in fact, it isn't so safe on two levels, both from the external and the judgment of the sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
You've got this woman who is a traditional communicator, is part of the old neighborhood variety of everybody looks out for everybody else, face to face with a woman who really doesn't want to have anything to do with anybody, is trying to remove herself from the world, and yet technology has somehow invaded her space. I'm curious, which side of the fence do you think makes you the most vulnerable? The traditional everybody looking out for everybody, it takes a village, or the technologically targeted individual who can't seem to escape it?
Boy, what a great question. I have to say, I would probably say they're equal, that we are all vulnerable. We go through life vulnerable, and technology has made our vulnerability more real-time immediate. You can be vulnerable in a period of a day an hour or less. If that makes sense.
Sure.
And so you end up having the vulnerability kind of equal. It's just a question of when it happens and how.
I congratulate you. Your play is just loaded with opportunities to kind of these blind alleys we were all trying to go down and figure out and tie together. And to be honest, it was very difficult to do. But one of those blind alleys was the phone call from the hospital. Mara receives a phone call, and she reports to Gilly that the phone call came from a police officer, and the police officer was asking about next of kin. One, did that in fact occur? Was that a police officer on the other end of the line? And two, is it a suggestion through the playwright that this police officer is attempting to warn the next of kin that somebody, for example, has escaped from a psych wing or what?
Well, I don't think it's a red herring. I think it's an actual call. Mm-hmm. I do believe strongly that that's how I wrote it. But do I believe that the person is warning? I'd like to leave that up to the audience.
Okay. Mm. Right.
I don't know. I kind of like the ambiguity of that.
And so did we. One of the elements within your work that has absolutely enthralled us.
Yeah, believe you got this done in 17 minutes. I haven't spent my life cutting my work. The fact that you had this in 17 minutes is to me.
Kudos to our post-production guy, John Beale.
Another piece of this that I found intriguing is that your character of Gilly, while wanting to embrace everyone in the neighborhood of her building and look out for everybody, is very distrusting of the florist.
Homophobia.
Very strong homophobia. And your opposite character, Mara, who wants nothing to do with anybody, has a trust for this man because he helped her carry paintings or heavy boxes. So I found that an interesting juxtaposition.
Well, it's an interesting little sort of parfait of layering of sociopolitical issues. I mean, one generation automatically distrustful of what is unknown to her, the other generation, a younger woman who would never in her wildest dreams judge this man by any standards, and doesn't in any way moralize about him.
Is it possible to hide in plain sight in the modern era?
I think not. I actually think not, and I think that's one of the challenges of the times. I think you can't take back words. You can't take. It's hard to even remove your. I just received a notice from LinkedIn. It's hard to remove your picture anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's very much in the spirit of this piece, isn't it?
Well, it's a good thing we work in radio.
You're vulnerable.
Yes.
It's a very good thing we work in radio because nobody sees us.
That's true. I wanted to say real quickly,
yes.
Radio, it's so important. important that it be preserved. I feel, Lucille, what's behind me, I feel that this kind of storytelling is so vital, and it is such an imagination stimulant that I miss it, that there isn't more of it. So
well,
I think it's extraordinary that you're revitalizing the form.
Thank you, and we hope that the radio gods will hear you on that, because we are very eager as the Petaluma Radio Players to take works like yours, bring them to the air, and restore a love, or tap into what we think is a hidden love for radio theater, if only people knew about us. So we've been speaking.
And the integrity of the storytelling in radio is so impeccable, and that's what I would like to, you know, underscore. It has its own rules, and when they are followed, it is magic.
For those of you listening to our radio broadcast, we've been talking with Hal Corley, former Emmy-winning writer with the team on All My Children and As the World Turns, who has then turned to radio scripts. We sincerely hope that, Lucille Fletcher, you're listening down from the heavens and enjoying today's production of The Sentinel.
This has been the Petaluma Radio Players production of The Sentinel by Hal Corley, starring Shirley Bennett as Gilly and Dory O'Day as Mara, directed by Emily Lord, recorded at Custom Costumes Cabaret Theater in Petaluma, California, recorded and mixed by John Beale, Foley artist Thane Schnick, produced by Ralph Scott, associate producer Kendra Murray, copyright 2018, the Petaluma Radio Players. We're on the web at PetalumaRadioPlayers.com. I'm your announcer, Cheryl Halling.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you have enjoyed this presentation. Please join us on Sundays at 6 p.m. Pacific, www.kpca.fm. Cheers!
The Petaluma Radio Players.
Like talking.